This two lectures episode features founder of Pop's Kitchen and co-founder of Island Social Club, Marie Mitchell, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2019.
Can I invite you all to actually just close your eyes for a minute? Sitting in a darkened room with the outline of children's toys and hospital strip lighting creeping in, I'm sat next to my nan in complete silence. I find the silence deafening as I'm used to noise and decide I need to go and find him. I need to make sure he's okay. Or in my 9-year-old mind, I need to check he doesn't need saving. I find him and he's stretched out with his face down and has a giant needle going into his spine. The only thing I remember after that are his eyes, as they were so wide, I thought they might actually explode. I don't know if this memory is completely factual, or if it's just the parts my memory has pieced together, but the one thing I'll never forget are his eyes. You just don't forget pain like that. So when I saw them again 15 years later, except this time they were the eyes of his mother, I knew something tragic had happened. You can all now open your eyes again. That was me reminding you of a memory of my brother when he'd contracted meningitis at the age of 14. And he'd been ill for about 2 weeks. And even though my mother kept telling the hospital that she thought it was actually meningitis, and they thought it was flu, it was in fact meningitis. And it ended up him being hospitalized and with fluid on his spine, and he had to have a lumbar puncture in which to remove it. And this basically triggered the beginning of a journey that I didn't know that I was about to embark on, which he didn't know he was going to embark on, which then triggered a disease that he had that had been dormant until that time, called mixed connective tissue disease, which is a form of lupus, which is an autoimmune disease. And so his body started attacking himself. And at the age of 16, his kidneys had failed and he was having dialysis. He had his first transplant at the age of 18 on his 18th birthday. And he had his second one around his 21st. And at 26, I gave him his third one. That's my brother and that's my mother. And I think they both have the most beautiful eyes. And essentially, this is about my finding my way home, because 10 years ago, last Sunday, just gone, my brother passed away. And that was 3 years after I gave him the kidney. And it was the catalyst for me to live a life that I don't think I would have potentially if that hadn't have actually happened. He was 6.5 years older than me, and it's quite funny because most people often assumed that I was the older sibling just because of the way I would behave. incredibly bossy. And I think my mum always tells this anecdote of when I was, I think, about a year old, and I once thought that some friends of his were bullying him, but in fact, they were actually just playing. And I was sat there and had my wooden blocks and I threw it at his head. It was actually meant to get his friends, but poor aim at that age. I grew up in a home with unwavering love, self-belief and determination. And that comes from my parents. And they created an environment for us to feel enriched, to feel important and to feel heard, which are all things that have fed into the work I do now. And that led me on a journey in which to feel fearless about donating a kidney to my brother. I came home, I think I was 20 years old. It was my first year of university. And by this point, the second kidney never really took very well. And I came home at Easter and saw my brother essentially dying. And I kind of always had a feeling within me that I wanted to try and save him, which is what I mentioned at the beginning. And this was my opportunity to try and see if I could do that for him. Because he'd already had the two operations, he had a 5% chance of ever being able to get a kidney that matched. So the likelihood, even though we were siblings, was quite low. Yet still, after 6 months of testing, I was. And I think this is probably one of the only times I've ever saw my brother cry. And it was when they were taking me to the operating room. And I can hear his flip-flops running down the hallway because they hadn't told him that I was on the way. And he literally stood there and he just said, thank you. And I think those words are the most powerful words if they really come from a place of actual thanks. And even with knowing what happened 10 years ago, if I could go back and do that all again, I would, because it gave him the three best years of his life since he was 14. This is a quote. I've recently been reading a book by Janet Mock, and it's called Redefining Realness. And when my brother passed away, I wasn't happy. And it took probably about 3 years worth of therapy to basically summarize that he was the person that was the most important person to me in the world. And with him, physically and metaphorically, a part of me died. So while reading this book, a lot of this has been coming to me, and it kind of set me on the path that I'm essentially on now. I had the pleasure of working with a beautiful family by the name of the Blaneys. Amanda actually spoke here last year. And I had been doing various different things because I'm someone that I like change. I like to mix things up. And I realized I wasn't happy and I wanted to do something for myself. Working for the Blaneys was a wonderful opportunity for me to actually take time out and think about what was important to me and how I wanted to live my life. And it was such a beautiful, safe space in which I was taught how to manage someone's beautiful sensitivity in their son, Reuben. I was taught how to parent by their beautiful daughter, Pearl. And I was taught how to love myself from their beautiful daughter, Rose. Her hugs are holy, so healing. And that stems from their parents. And Michael is someone who has taught me how to understand the need to be with someone who enriches your life. And Amanda just taught me how to believe in myself. And one of the most funny things is, though I was their nanny, I was actually, in our interview was just about food. And that's kind of now how we get to the food part of what I'm talking about. And I decided to start a supper club. It'll be 4 years ago in September. And it was a way for me to be able to go back to my roots, essentially, and understand my cultural heritage. Growing up in Britain, you don't really hear enough about the contribution that black, African and Caribbean immigrants have actually made. And so this is my investigation in which to be able to understand that and to share that with the world. And it's a way of rerouting British Caribbean culture in the UK. So I started Pop's Kitchen 4 years ago in September, and it was initially started with my parents. My dad helped me cook. My beautiful mum, as you can tell, loves to host. She is probably one of the most outrageous flirts I've ever met in my life. And this was probably the way in which we were able to reroute and redefine our family again. And for the first time, we kind of felt like a family again, because for quite a while, I think, particularly my dad, actually, I think he was unable to express the fact that he had lost his partner in crime. And I think that's how we all felt. I struggled immensely, and I think a lot of that stemmed from the fact that I was scared, because I'd always had a brother, I'd always had a sibling, I'd always had an ally. And suddenly I became very aware of mortality, and in a way in which then made me feel like I was alone. So starting this business really gave me the opportunity again to unite my family and to be able to start working on the things that I wanted to. Nearly a year in, I met my business partner of the business I now run, called Island Social Club, and this is just a little introduction to it.
London is the place for me. London, this lovely city. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia, but you must come back to London City.
Now, when it comes to Instagram, I'm a bit of a stalker. and that's basically how I met my business partner, Joseph. Whenever anyone used to follow me on Pop's Kitchen, I would always check out who they were. I remember seeing this thing called pop-up called Everybody's Rum Shop. I was like, who are they? So I sent a message and said, you know, I'd love to know a bit more, because it was all very elusive, which I now understand is his MO. He explained they run a rum pop-up, and he'd noticed me and would be great to collaborate. So that's the first supper club that we ever did together, and I almost killed him. I didn't sleep for 2 days, because every day he kept saying, another person wants to come, so I ended up cooking for 70 people in a kitchen I'd never cooked in before, of which none of the equipment was there when we actually showed up. So that was interesting, but it was the birth of Island Social Club, which... Both Joe and I is our journey of understanding what it means to be British Caribbean. And we are both second generation immigrants. And it's a way in which we are able to move the conversation on from what people kind of experience as Caribbean. Now, both my parents are originally from Jamaica, but actually there's so much more to the Caribbean than jerk. And even though jerk is actually one of the most beautiful things and really is an amalgamation of the four different continents that essentially came together in the Caribbean, it's our way of being able to explore this. We have been incredibly lucky to recently start a residency, our first permanent residency this year, of which we've already featured in The Guardian, ES Magazine, Munchies. And for me, my brother passing away was wholeheartedly the hardest thing I've ever dealt with. But what it taught me is that it's so important to understand that home is actually part of you. And I have been on a journey in which, in losing him, I actually gained so much more. And it took a long time for me to understand that. And his anniversary on Sunday was probably the first anniversary in the 10 years that I haven't cried. And I think that was because I woke up in the morning and decided to look on his Facebook profile that we still have active and read the conversations that we used to have. And it reminded me that the reason why I decided to get into food is because it's about having conversations. It's about understanding that through food and breaking bread, you actually are able to engage with people and you can broach subjects that are hard and that are difficult. And it can lead you to places that you didn't know before. And essentially the food that's on your plate is a journey in itself. And having an appreciation and understanding of that is the way in which we can get towards coming home. Now, I'm thankful that in working for the Blaneys and in allowing myself to be as free as I wanted to with the work that I'm doing, I've found my way home. And I also then found the love of my life, who's hiding on the third row over there. And who every day teaches me and shows me that I can do whatever I want to do and gives me the space and the freedom in which to do that. We won't do it again. And it's just essentially this... is just my way of saying that I think food is just a vehicle and one that we should respect and understand and love, because it's more than just food. And it was the way in which I found my way home and the way in which it taught me to understand that actually I am my own home, and wherever I go, I can make my home. And yeah.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.